This is Let's Talk Tribe, the official Let's Go Tribe podcast, episode 109. I am your host, Matt Lyons, and on this week's episode, we have Baseball Perfectus' 2019 annual guide to the baseball season. We'll look over some Indian stuff in that. Spring training games are underway. We'll maybe talk about some things in those. The Indians signed Hanley Ramirez, and of course, we'll answer your questions. Joining me for all that and more is none other than Mr. Merritt Rolfing. Merritt, how you doing?
I mean, the Indians signed Hanley Ramirez. Why wouldn't I be excited? Come on.
But Merritt, he's old. He must be bad. There's no possible way.
You know what? You're old. You must be bad.
How dare you? Although I guess if I was a baseball player, I'd be a year away from being completely unsignable because I'm 29. So this is really my last chance to get signed.
I'm 32, so I am utterly unsignable and useless.
There is no long-term deal in your future, Merritt.
I will not get a free agent contract of any kind.
But you know what? You would have if the Players Association cared about you when you were a budding prospect at 22, but they didn't.
So. Actually, I take that back. I'm left-handed, so I will work until I'm dead, basically. So never mind. I'm fine. You guys can suffer all you want.
I'm screwed.
I'll get $3 million deals every year. It's perfect.
See, that's why I haven't signed yet, because I'm almost 29. That's why.
Yeah, that must be why. Not because of the amazing drop-off in impact ability. Your contact rate's cratered. Haven't taken a walk in 2 years.
Listen, Merritt, I have never struck out in the major league, so I am ready.
Well, you know what? We don't care about strikeouts anymore, Matt. When you're making weak contact back to the pitcher every time. But its contact rate's 104% somehow. All he ever does is bunt.
Like the exact opposite of Yandy Diaz, who, by the way, is hitting balls straight up in the air with the Tampa Bay Rays. It's fine. Whatever. He's just pulling balls. I mean, granted, they're BP, but I've never seen him hit balls in the air before, so it was remarkable. It's fine. It's going to be fine, Merritt. He's going to be bad in Tampa Bay. He's definitely not going to hit scorching 100-mile-per-hour home runs all season long.
Oh, God. What if he just hit, like, 380 and he has, like, 67 home runs?
It's fine. It's great.
Is that the greatest? Would that be the greatest failure in Indians history of talent? Whatever.
Oh, I mean, if it's judgment. Well, I mean, if you exaggerate a little less, maybe that's clearly the biggest failure. If Yandy Diaz is the greatest player in baseball, did the Indians mess up a little bit? Yeah, I think they did. I mean,
in fairness, that wouldn't even be as good as like Barry Bonds' 2001.
That's right. To be fair, he's not exactly Barry Bonds.
If he has 85% of Barry Bonds' 2001 season or 2004, is that the greatest failure in Indians history?
I do wonder, though, like, what are the other big failures they've had? I guess Jesus Aguilar kind of counts, but I can't think of any that stick out as, like, just really blowing it. So if Yandy Diaz is pretty damn good, they really screwed up. I guess it just depends on how good Jake Bowers is, but.
I mean, that's fair. I don't know. If he turns it around, I'm going to get really pissed off at the entire Indians developmental system. After reading that Bauer article, and then there was another thing that pissed me off this week, too. I can't remember what it was, though. I think there's just general inability to create a good outfielder, maybe. But, like, they just ignore things. I don't know. This is supposed to be a forward-thinking team, and yet somehow their aspects of it are trapped in not forward-thinkingness, and that's bad news anyway.
Well, I think, to be fair, Bauer and I think even Clevinger before and Kyle Boddy have all said that the Indians are really like one of the more receptive teams to this analytical stuff. I just think teams are so far behind that there's still stuff. Well, maybe they're not behind, but I mean, there's still stuff that looks obvious to other people that maybe they're not quite, I don't know.
Doing.
Yeah. But I think there are some teams that are just way behind, but the Indians are one of the closest to the front. That's why I didn't take the Clevinger and Bauer. I think the one you're talking about specifically is like how Clever Bauer basically fixed Clevinger without the coaches, and then Tito didn't believe his velocity was up. It was just the gun that was broken. I think that was more lighthearted than people took it as.
No, especially the gun thing. Yeah, I think that was way more. I think that was more just that sounded like something Frank Oner just says in his normal joking tone.
Right. Yeah.
No, it was more things like when Cody Allen just wouldn't listen to him.
Yeah.
I don't know. Or I read that. That's what it was. I read that article on Fangraphs this past week about how Josh Tomlin went to Driveline Baseball this winter to relearn how to pitch. And in my head, I'm just like, why do they, after they leave, do they go and make these big changes and stuff? Like, what if he comes back and is just, I don't know, not great, but like turns into Jamie Moyer or something?
I don't know. Like, maybe before this season, he figured he was good enough to be what he was. And then when he had a total disaster, he wanted to go somewhere else and improve. It just kind of sucks. It was his last year, then he's gone to do it.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know. I guess we do have this idea that all players want to get better and better and be the best that they can be. But not everyone has that Michael Jordan kind of sensibility. Some of them just are, hey, I'm a major leaguer. You know, I'm okay. I could work real hard, hit 325 with 35 home runs, but I can hit 280 with 20 home runs and, you know, play for the next 15 years. So.
Yeah, and then like the Cody Allen thing, that was kind of weird. But I get that, I guess. That, I mean, obviously he was exaggerating. He said he could fix his curveball in 2 days. You know, I don't think he could do that. Maybe, but
he could. Who's to say?
But just imagine being Cody Allen, and then you're like, you know what you're doing. You're a pretty decent closer. And Trevor Bauer's like, hey, do this thing. Hey, he do this
thing.
Yeah,
but I mean, you're being – but if you're shit for like an entire season.
Then maybe try something new. I agree with you. I'm just saying.
Try something, you know, like – Jason Giambi wore leopard print thongs. He grew a weird mustache. He probably also did on the field things too, but he tried things whenever he was slumping.
Whatever you got to do. Whatever.
You know,
wear a chicken suit. I don't know.
Yeah.
So, Merritt, we got these big old books.
Yo, there's a hardcover version of this book, apparently, and I didn't know about it until today when one of the editors showed it off on Twitter. I'm like, what the?
Nobody buys it. Even like the people that show off their show, it's always the I was going to say soft cover. Why am I blanking on the word there? The paperback version that everybody has. Nobody buys the hardcover of Baseball Prospectus.
But I want it.
Why? That'd be a brick. That'd be huge.
Do I still have... How many copies of this do I have now? I think just 3. You can tell when I started making a living wage because I started buying the Baseball Prospectus annual.
Well, see, I started in 2016 because that was the one where I was in the acknowledgments. And I'm still coming down off that high, so yeah.
That's fun. No, that's the first one I bought because that's when I started making enough money to survive. So more than enough money to just survive.
That should be the line where you know where you're good if you're buying annuals every year.
Oh yeah, definitely.
So what did you see in this year? I assume you at least read the Indians part so far, if not the whole thing. I did.
I also enjoyed reading some of the Royals ones because reading about bad teams is always a lot of fun. I enjoyed the essay by Emma Bacchiari of I probably
Sports Illustrated.
That name.
Sports no, I think you're right.
I enjoyed the essay. I don't know. I mean, it kind of bolstered things I already knew about the team. I reminded me that I keep on mixing up Will Benson and Nolan Jones constantly in my head. I don't know why I do that, but Nolan Jones is the one with the great bat who may be a borderline star, whereas Will Benson is the one who hits the ball real hard and can't make contact worth a damn. Oh, but my biggest takeaway, though, from reading all the different Indians blurbs was, why is Matt so enamored of Oscar Mercado? Because I looked at his numbers and went, I don't know about that one, bud.
He's so fast. Merritt's fast.
I mean, speed is nice.
And he's really good defensive. And, oh boy, yeah, I'm looking at it now. Maybe he can't hit, but you know what? Ooh, that's bad.
Listen, I guess I was saying, reminded, man. I guess more than anything, I was reminded that when you pay such as close attention to a single team as I do with the Indians, this really doesn't reveal anything to me at all.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? It's nice to have an outside take on things. But, like, their Lindor one wasn't quite as loving as last year's was. Was that last year's? I think it was last year's. Where it was borderline poetic about it. The thing that they did basically quote a book called Darkness at Noon? Is that what it's called? If you read Darkness at Noon. If you read the blurb underneath Neil Ramirez, which obviously you did not, it is a near word-for-word quote from a book called Darkness at Noon, published by British novelist Arthur Koestler. It's a tale of Rubishov, an old Bolshevik who was arrested in prison and tried for treason against the government that he helped create, and is rated as one of the greatest English language novels of the 20th century.
Well, there you go.
Because these nerds at Baseball Prospectus read books. Not me. I only read the Baseball Prospectus Annual and then also the various books about Dungeons and Dragons. Not a nerd thing.
But like you said, like it's not a ton of illuminating things. Even Emma's essay, which is really, really well written and everything, but it was all like stuff we already know. I wonder if like people who don't read about the Indians, like, oh, really? They're in a division and they're in a bad division and they can just win it like that? I wonder if that's like new things to everybody else. Which well, I guess no, is what I... you have to write it for, because if you can't really write it for Indians fans, because if they follow close enough like we do, I guess you don't write it for people who follow close enough as we do, but like just regular Indians fans, it's a tough balance to follow because it's fans who care enough to care about the sabermetric stuff, but not the ones who follow it too closely and already know like most ins and outs of teams.
And it's, I don't know, it's the essay is not so much just thing everyone already knows, but it's a confirmation of, you know, what we all kind of worried and suspected and saw happen all this winter, that the Indians, as front office, more so than the players, don't really care about winning a World Series per se. They care about making the playoffs because, I mean, as Billy Beane said, my shit doesn't work in the playoffs. And that's very true. I mean, that said, of course, we saw who played in the World Series this year. It was two of the highest, the two highest spending teams in baseball. And spending money does help you get there, I guess is what I'm saying. It would be nice if they spent a little more money.
I don't know if it's completely fair to say they don't care about winning the World Series. I think caring about getting into the playoffs is like the extent that you really need to care about winning the World Series. Like, if you really can get there over year over year, then you've got a pretty good shot at doing it eventually, I think.
It's, and I've talked about this several different times, but it's just their lack of willingness to trade out of the starting rotation is, I guess, what frustrates me the most. So this seems a little bit, I don't know, short-sighted in a way. Windows do exist for teams of the Indians' wealth, and so it would be nice if they could just take advantage of it. Because they're going to be bad in 3 or 4 years or whatever, you know? They're not going to be as good, and other teams are going to be better, so.
Are they going to be bad? I think their goal is to not be bad in that time, right? Because that's like because they refused to trade Shane Bieber, from what we know, like for a half season of Bryce Harper. So I really think their goal is to keep being good enough to win the division, like for as long as possible, and give yourself a shot. That's the way I see it, anyway.
I guess, but I mean, eventually one of those teams is going to come back around. Like, it's not going to be such a cakewalk anymore, and like you can't just do that on the strength of a rotation and two bats. Not when the other team is capable of winning 90 games.
Yeah, that's fair. Like, I do just wish there was more competition. I think we talked about that before, but it'd be so much better. just one team, make them try a little bit.
No, I mean, I agree, but I mean, hey, maybe it would force the Indians to actually try something, but it's just a little frustrating as all.
Now, Merritt, in this here baseball prospectus.
Ryan O'Hearn?
What?
Bobby Bradley comes.
What are you looking? Don't look at it yet. No, the best part is, so in this here baseball prospectus, they give you comps after every player. It's one of my favorite things to go through. Even before I read, I just rapidly go down and look at them. So Bobby Bradley, you know, the power-hitting first-base prospect who seems like he lost some of his luster last year just because of how much he strikes out. But he's only 23 in AAA, so, I mean, give the guy a break. But his comps are, as you said, Ryan O'Hearn, mm-hmm. Paul Goldschmidt, best first baseman in baseball, Jerry Sands. They're literally saying he could be anybody in baseball. How do you get Paul Goldschmidt and Jerry Sands in the same comps?
And Ryan O'Hearn. Don't sleep on him. I'm a big fan of his.
Who the hell is Ryan O'Hearn?
He's the first baseman for the Royals. I saw him play in single-A Lexington a ton.
He does not exist.
I love him.
He is not a real
person. He does. He's probably going to be a platoon bat. But he's anywhere from useless to best player ever in baseball to at the position to platoon bat. So it's one of those three.
I mean, they're all like that too. That can happen. That with these projections, like you can be Jerry Sands, who was really good for a week, or Paul Goldschmidt, who's the best.
I mean, anywhere from Brett Gardner to Trevor Crowe, that's a pretty good range for Greg Allen. So obviously nobody knows anything. And that's Greg. That would be Brett Gardner at age 26. So he wasn't even all that good then, but still.
Yeah, I guess these comparables aren't technically like projections of who they'll be. It's just who they were
at this level. No, it's comparable to who they are, to other players were at that age.
Let me live this dream, Merritt, okay? I want to believe that. Like, I guess it is kind of remarkable that Jerry Sands and Paul Goldschmidt were the same player, basically.
I'm saying, well, hey, Oscar Mercado gives you Charlie Blackman, so your dream stays alive.
There you go.
And Jordan Luplow gives you Matt Laporta, so there you go.
Well, we need to talk about Luplow real quick, because today I learned that it's actually Luplow, and my life has never been the same.
Well, I'm going to keep on saying this one.
No, you're wrong. It's definitely Luplow, which is god-awful. Luplow is a good name. That's a good baseball name. Luplow, that's a name for a serial character.
Sounds like a loophole.
Also, no, it sounds like like on the box of a cereal. It's the Luplow man. He brings you Cheerios.
Apparently today was National Chowder Day, and I thought about making clam chowder, but it takes a lot of effort, and I didn't have any of it to put in. So chowder for Merritt.
So another thing I noticed in this, that Baseball Prospectus really, really likes Roberto Perez. Like, a whole lot, Merritt. As in, he's
who doesn't?
The best defensive catcher by a long shot. By fielding runs above average, and then he's like one of the best overall catchers. He has 3.2 wins above replacement player warp, which is their war thing basically. But they expect him to be one of the best catchers almost purely on defense because his bat is almost nothing. But his framing and just defense is so good. He's projected. It's like a whole – it's two wins over Yan Gomes' projection. So I think maybe the Indians front office knew what they were doing with Yan Gomes.
If Pecota's to be believed, sure. But, I mean, that's the thing about catching is we don't know anything still about it. That is one of the great frontiers of baseball judgment even still is knowing the actual impact of a great catcher in all the different ways that they do things. You know, I mean, even – things that people think are, you know, kind of poo-poo, like calling games and things like that. Like that's we can kind of quantify framing and blocking and throwing, but even within that, like we can't quantify knowing what pitch to call or being able to calm down a pitcher or, you know, someone like Doug Mirabelli being able to catch a knuckleball. These are just, I don't know. When you're involved in literally every single play of the game, even more so than any pitcher, you have a greater impact than I think anyone on the field. So this is just a demonstration of that. And I agree with you that I think the Indians know what they have in Roberto Perez. I think that they got him for a steal. Like that kind of, he signed the contract, what, a couple of years ago now, and it seemed like kind of a lot of money. He's still going to hit, you know, like shit. I'm amazed that they projected him to 9 home runs.
Yeah, I think when you say we don't know defense, you're talking about us on the outside, right?
Yeah,
because I think we're getting to the point where teams know it pretty well. Like,
well, that's the thing. I think they do to a degree, but even with all that, you know, like it's. I think there's good approximations, but but even with all that, I don't think that even a lot of teams have a firm grasp on what makes a great catcher, like framing. Was a big thing 5 years ago, but the margins have narrowed on that. So everyone has a good framing catcher now at this point. It's just I think Perez has the whole package: framing, blocking, throwing. He just has every. He's a perfect catcher that can't hit at all.
It's so the other thing with the Roberto Perez Yan Gomes thing is like the way the Indians traded Yan Gomes is kind of. Impressive. Like he was a fan favorite player, maybe not to like people who like really really good players, but if you look on the Facebook pages of everywhere, like everybody loved Yan Gomes, and by all accounts trading him away for Daniel Johnson should have like caused an uproar. But the way they did, just on December 1st, when it's kind of hung over from the baseball season, nothing else has really started, they just traded him real quickly for Daniel Johnson, and then by now like nobody remembers. He's just gone. It's not a huge deal. If they waited till now to trade him, or not now, but like right before spring training started, there would have been people paying attention to baseball who were really angry at trading their favorite player, Yan Gomes. But the way they did it just in like the dead of night to trade away Yan Gomes, I thought was really, really smart way to do it. Because they got a guy who might be good in Daniel Johnson, but more importantly, they got rid of Yan Gomes' contract and let their guy, Roberto Perez, be the starting catcher now without the fan base trying to burn them down. Because maybe they could have got more if they waited it out a little longer and shopped him around, but they didn't let the rumors linger. They just were going to traded him, and then moved on with the offseason. So I thought that was kind of a neat way to do it.
I've been reminded 3 separate times to listen to DC Sports Talk Radio that they have Yan Gomes. I've actually forgotten a couple times. Like, oh, shit, that's right. He's here.
That's what I'm saying. Like the way when they traded him, he just never felt like part of the team now. It just felt normal that the 2019 Indians wouldn't have him because they did it so early.
Well, yeah, and plus, you know, everyone was so wrapped up in which pitcher are they going to trade, and then the answer was none, and by then, that was all over. They were like, wait, who'd they get rid of? Edwin and Yonder and Yonder? Like, whoa, they're all gone? And Yandy? All the Yons are gone?
They did, didn't they?
Yeah, they
traded the whole Yon trio.
Maybe that's what was holding the Indians back all. Those guys were forming a cabal against everyone else because our names all sound the same.
Their yawns above average were too high. You got to lower that number a bit.
You know, that's one of those things. It's those marginal things you got to work on. You got to spread it out around the league.
So, Mayor, any other stray observations here from the baseball perspectives this year?
Yeah, I would say the one that if anyone gets a chance, the essay about the Orioles is pretty good. I enjoyed that one too. So I
can't wait to read the one. What did Nick Offerman write? I didn't find his essay yet in here.
Who?
Nick Offerman.
I assume the one about the Cubs.
Oh, he wrote the Cubs one. I don't want to read that.
I'm assuming so. I mean, he's a Cubs fan, so I don't want to read that. Never mind. Yeah, because he's a Cubs fan, and then someone else is a... Yeah, Nick Offerman wrote the one for the Cubs.
Oh, that's neat. Yeah, I saw he did that. I thought it'd be cool. So, all right. So the Indians are technically playing games now. I don't know if you knew. They're really boring. They don't count. Nobody cares. I really hate spring training games.
I love it, man. You should go down to spring training sometimes. It'll remind you why you love baseball.
Oh, no. Going to spring training is a completely different thing. I think I'd love to be there like for it. But watching on TV and knowing the games are happening, it has zero impact on how much I care about the return of baseball.
I don't get to watch it either. That's what I'm pissed off about right now. They're not on TV yet. Or maybe they are. I don't even know. The first one was. Was it?
Yeah. And then Tito had a nice quote about it. Was he was saying that, like, spring training is nice because in the ninth inning, you get someone with, like, Ernie Clement who gets a rocket up his ass and energizes everybody. That was kind of neat. But
that's a good quote.
But the rest of it's so boring, man. I don't care about
the...
Did
I pay for MLB TV again by accident? Did I auto-refresh?
Oh, it does. It'll get you money. No. Don't worry, Merritt.
Oh, God, no.
You have paid, whether you know it or not.
That's good to know.
But yeah, so any thoughts? I apparently didn't watch the first game, but...
No, I mean, it's as I have it for so many years, I just check the stats and think to myself, ooh, we're good now, or ooh, he's bad now, because it all matters and things like that.
It's only been apparently, 3 games, and people are already reacting to the bullpen being just god-awful.
Apparently Jose Ramirez is in a slump, so that's bad news. he's in three sitting 200 so far. Oh, God, who's this Taylor character? Give up 7 runs today.
Yeah, Ben Taylor. He was going to be one of the bullpen. I mean, he still could be. It's his first spring training game. Who cares? But, yeah. Oh, Greg, so another good thing, if you want to swing the opposite direction and overlook or overanalyze good things, is that Greg Allen homered off a lefty, so he's clearly about to break out. And Tyler Naquin hit the first home run in spring. So there you go. Mm-hmm. The outfield.
I'm all here for early spring training overreactions when the pitchers are still just like just throwing just meatballs and just messing around and having a nice time. I'm all in for that, man. Yeah.
Oh, it's the worst. Like if I was there, I think it's different. That'd be fun. Cause like the equivalent of when I used to like the Pro Bowl. Cause I do like seeing athletes just sort of like playing around and not being too serious in games. I think that's kind of fun. Especially when you're younger, to see like these superstars just interacting with each other and with fans and stuff. So that's neat. But as someone who wants to care about baseball again, it doesn't do it for me at all. Not even the overreactions, Merritt. I can't even get excited for people calling for Ben Taylor's head already after one god-awful two-thirds of an inning. I think it's Tommy John surgery.
2007. That must be what it is. Okay, yeah, so he was just coming back from Tommy John surgery. I'm okay with that then. Maybe he'll be good.
Yeah.
I was excited for him when they got him. I don't know why, but I liked his curveball, so...
Well, yeah, I remember everybody laughing about Brandon Moss for Joey Wendell, and now Wendell's kind of really good, and now Rob Kaminsky, who was traded for Brandon Moss, is not very good. So I guess the Rays kind of had the last laugh on that. I mean, the A's should have, but then they traded Joey Wendell, so.
Between having Barry Bonds Jr. and now this, it's ridiculous. But yeah, no, I have no takes. I mean, whatever, it's early spring training. It's fun, it's back, and I like seeing the videos and stuff, but I just haven't had a chance to watch or anything like that.
Yeah.
There's nothing that is the one problem is you can check the stats all you want, but you can draw no information from it. The entirety of a spring training is process. It's seeing how guys are reacting to this or see what they're working on. Like you go there and just watch Ramirez trying to hit singles to the opposite field for an entire game. Cause that's what he feels like doing that day or something like that,
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Well, here's a take.
I'm fine with it.
I think like spring training is like for people who like baseball, watching spring training is how people who don't like baseball view regular games. Cause there's no context. You're just watching some guy throw a ball and somebody you don't know hit a ball.
Yes.
Like, so somebody who never watches baseball, that's what they're seeing every day. So it's kind of understandable why maybe not everybody likes it. Cause if you just watch it and don't get into the context, there is almost nothing to baseball.
Yeah. Like when Dalbert Siri is pitching to, who would he have pitched to? One inning, one third of an inning, bottom, I don't know, Jet Bandy or something, whoever he pitched to. That means nothing to me.
Right, and that means nothing to somebody else watching, like Madison Bumgarner pitched to Mike Trout. They don't know these people at all. It's just somebody throwing the ball and somebody hitting it.
Right, yeah.
That's why I've never bought like... Ken Burns baseball with all those people talking about how romantic the game is and how beautiful like a painting it is or whatever. Like that's if you like baseball. If you don't like baseball, it doesn't It's just dudes standing around swinging. So I get it when people don't like it, but and I kind of understand it more watching spring training, but regular season baseball is still amazing. When you will appreciate the context and know it and want to see more of it.
Well, I mean, spring training baseball is still great to me because I love minor league.
Well, you're wrong. It's fine. So much.
No, you're wrong. You're the wrong one.
So
Preston Beck. Yeah, someone, what's his name? Dalbert Siri pitching to Preston Beck. These are names we'll never hear again. So, yeah.
I will hear Preston Beck. Don't you worry. He's going to listen to this podcast, and just because of you, he's going to like print out that write word that says you will never hear this guy again with a picture of your face and like put it inside of his locker. He's going to spite you, Merritt. His Hall of Fame speech is going to start with "fuck you, Merritt."
First of all, fuck Merritt Ruff. I'll be there for it.
So the Indians did something fun. They signed Hanley Ramirez. That's fun in a he's just a big old goofball who at one point people thought he just wouldn't play anymore, that he was lazy or whatever. But last year he still hit the ball really hard. He had a hard hit rate of 46.5%. 27s in tops. Baseball. That's ahead of like Mike Trout and a bunch of other big names.
Yeah, but Mike Trout doesn't do anything superb. He just does everything great. Remember that.
Well, I mean, still, when you're ahead of Mike Trout in something, you got to at least count that for something.
No.
You're ahead of Mike Trout, and you're also 30 million years old.
Wrong. He's 34. He's only 2 years older than me, so shut up.
He's not only 34.
Yeah, he is.
Hanley Ramirez?
He is 35 years old.
There you go. You're wrong.
He just turned 35.
It's weird how much older 35 looks than 34 when you're talking baseball, but
it's true. 35. Oh god. That's nearly dead.
But either way, the dude hits the ball hard. He can still sort of spread it around. On the Athletic, TJ Zuby looked into like why Hanley still hits the ball hard and didn't have good results last year. And it basically comes down to the fact that when he hits the ball hard, he is still spreading the ball around like overall, but his hardest hits are going straight up the middle and everything's going right on the ground. So he's basically turned into Yandy Diaz last year. So maybe if the Indians thought they could fix Yandy Diaz but didn't want to, and maybe they can apply the same thing to Hanley, I don't know. But maybe he can be a platoon player. Either way, it's just a minor league deal. He could be worth $1 million. So what do you think of this, getting the guy with the dreads and the fun and Hanley Ramirez?
Yeah, man, I'm all for it. I mean, the offense is going to be dreadful anyway, so you might as well just roll the dice. I mean, this is one of the more classic Indian signings we see. We talked about this last week when they signed, I don't know, whatever the trash pile guy they got was for the, maybe Tyler Clippert or something like that. I don't know.
Matt Joyce is the one you're thinking of, I think.
Oh, okay. Yeah, probably Matt Joyce. Yeah, whatever.
That sounds like him. Matt Joyce is going to put that on his locker, put a picture of Merritt in the Hall of Fame speech.
Some trash
pile. You're going to be in so many lockers.
It's fine. You know, it's cool. I mean, like you said, he's been hitting the ball real hard, just the wrong way, so maybe his bat's slowing down. Maybe he's just been unlucky. Who knows? Maybe he just needs some good coaching. And the Indians apparently will provide that.
Maybe it's in like Boston. I mean, have you been to Boston? That city sucks.
Many times. I don't mind it that bad at all, actually. It's fine.
No, it's old. I don't like it.
I'm from New England. Everything there is old. So, I mean,
it's garbage.
There's a barn down the street from my parents' house that is from the 1600s. So, I mean, what is old? I don't even know.
But it could be that. Maybe he didn't like playing in Boston for some reason. Because it was like as soon as he went to Boston, his numbers all tanked. I don't know.
I have always loved the idea of people going to places like Cleveland or Kansas City or, you know, any of the kind of hinterland, you know, the small marketplace where they're like, it's so much more relaxing here. This is my retirement community. I'm just going to hang out here, play some baseball with the boys, have a good time, you know. No pressure, man. Yeah, sure. It's a billion-dollar organization, but no pressure, man. We're just hanging out, having a good time.
Let's just pick this microphone and steal it from Andre Knott and make hats out of cups.
Yeah. What do you mean you're trying to run a professional broadcast here? Ooh.
But I agree. It's fun. It's weird.
Let's
seeing
throw
that.
Seeds at each other. Yeah.
I guess it's because the media is just more relaxed than like being in Boston or New York, where it's just constant and.
Well, there's less of it, too, is right. The thing that I've always heard. Like, they talk about the media being like just hounding. And it's only because there's, you know, New York's got, what, like 5 newspapers even still. And then all those radio stations and whatnot. Boston's got a similar thing. Like, I think the Globe alone probably has three Red Sox writers, not even including Dan Shaughnessy. So you have his I don't want to say anything mean about Dan Shaughnessy. Never mind. But yeah, it's just you have guys just wandering around, just trying to find stories, just hounding you for stuff, and then writing hot takes on it. So, and then Bill Simmons sitting over at the Ringer, just making shit up too.
I think it was on A to Z podcast. They talked about like the difference in a media between like a large market and a small market, and like places like Cleveland are smaller markets. There's usually people helping the players, like telling the media what kind of questions they can ask and kind of helping guide, so it's not getting hot takes from the players. That in New York and Boston, it's just a frenzy every time the door is open. So there's plus, just no also, barrier. You
know, like if ESPN's going to talk about baseball, it's going to talk about one of what, six teams at this point. And I can't even think of who the other two would be. So like
it's Boston, New York, Los Angeles. That's like it.
Well, the Astros right now, because they just won a World Series. And then I don't know, the Cubs, I guess. So that's five. But yeah, you know, Stephen A. Smith has got a hot take about someone on. They probably have to devote a segment every day during the summer to baseball, so they're going to hot take about something. So,
yeah,
it's going to be why so and so is slumping because he hasn't had a hit in two games, or how he's overpaid now, or how he didn't hustle quite hard enough, and so he shouldn't get $300 million, even though he's one of the best players in baseball.
Did you also see that Trevor Bauer like thanked Manny Machado for going to the NL?
Yes,
that was funny because I guess they're friends.
Yeah, that's cute. That's
good. So, Mary, not going to lie, I've been just waiting to get to these questions this week because we got good ones.
Woo!
So,
we did get some good ones.
So, every Monday, we ask on Twitter and Facebook for questions to send us in. We'll answer on the podcast. This week, we got some really interesting ones that required research and fun thinking. Some
you
about
jerks
spring training.
Making me do work for this podcast.
How dare you, first of all?
I am upset.
So, the first one from at Nick Jaskuzitz.
Very good, man. I'm so proud of you.
Sorry, Nick. If you hear this, please just let me know. Pronounce your name when you ask another question. I try. It's Mary. Did you see it, Nick? Just excuse it.
I can't read. We've been over this. Jesus Christ,
anyway,
man.
He asked my favorite question, I think. Which random, aka not a superstar Hall of Famer, former Indians players would make a perfect addition to the 2019 team? And I asked him just to make it a little more distinct. Just no all-stars. So nobody's been on an all-star team. I was excited for you, Merritt, for a second because I thought you'd be this chance to talk about Ellis Burks, but he's been an all-star.
Ah, I forgot about Ellis Burks. Damn it.
He's been an all-star, so it doesn't count. So
I know, yeah.
So do you have any ideas? Did you look up anybody just to see
who might... Yeah, I have the only right answer.
Who's that?
Oscar Gamble.
What?
Oscar Gamble. Indian? Yeah, he was an Indian for 3 years, yeah. Over a three-year period between the ages of 23 and 25, he hit .274, .352, .463, good for a .131 OPS plus. Averaged 18 home runs in 123 games.
Oh, wow. Has he been an all-star?
Never was an all-star. He got MVP votes in 1977. He was 29th in the MVP voting because he posted a .974 OPS with the White Sox, hitting 31 home runs. Had a lot of success with the Yankees, posted a .141 OPS plus with them over 540 games in 7 years. Had an amazing afro, and I believe he is a progenitor of the quote, "They think it don't be like it is, but it do."
Well, just screw everything I looked up then, because that's clearly the right answer. Yeah, I remember him as a Yankee with the afro. I never even remembered that he was an Indian. Mm-hmm, but he was pretty good on the Indians.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, he was a solid player, yeah.
Yeah. So the ones I had.
I have to say, I just want to say, too, there is a certain hell you enter into when you start researching the mid-70s Indians. There is some garbage out there.
Yeah, once I hit the 80s, I was just sort of like Googling just to find out.
No. Well, I was doing it and I realized I have Play Index, so I was just like, oh, right, I'll just do this. That was easy.
Oh, that was probably a better idea. I was going through the baseball reference page and like going back and then looking at the outfielders and third baseman. That's all I focused on. I didn't look at pitchers because I'm not going to add a pitcher. But mine was – so Joe Charbonneau is kind of an easy one to stick out. If you can get him just for his rookie year.
But yeah.
I mean, yeah. And I guess for all these, we have to assume, because like we've talked about before, if you just took Oscar Gamble and put him in today's game, he probably wouldn't be very good. So we just have to assume like all these things translate, if they got the right conditioning, technology, all that stuff.
Well, I figure, things will be better. He won't get a haircut. Things continue to be like they are, even though people think that they are. So they do be that way. So, yeah.
Is he really the one that came up with that quote?
Yeah, that's him. Yeah.
I thought that was just a meme with that one kid.
No,
that's great.
That's an Oscar Gamble quote.
And there's 2004 Casey Blake. That's a decent one. Mm-hmm. Never an all-star. And then the one I thought I really found something, but he was an all-star once, is Brett Butler. I was more surprised he was an all-star only once. He's like one of the best Dodgers leadoff men of all time, but he played with the Indians in 1987. He had a 295, 399 slash, 425. He could steal a bunch of bases. If he wasn't an all-star, that would have been a good one, I think. And then kind of an outside-the-box one, maybe. I don't know. Franklin Gutierrez in 2008. Never an all-star. Yeah, really, really good center fielder defensively. Kind of can't hit. Basically, maybe Oscar Mercado can be him, just without the weird stomach issues. He was really good for the Indians 1 year, or for the Mariners 1 year. He still wasn't an all-star. There was like a 6-win player, but he wasn't an all-star. So maybe him in his last year with the Indians could help the outfield quite a bit. But man, you just found Oscar Gamble and that was it.
Yeah, that's really all you need. A 24-year-old Oscar Gamble, 291, 363, 469. I mean,
now did he have the hair back then? Because I'm going to knock him off a little bit if he didn't.
I don't know. That's a very good question.
That's part of the package. I'm assuming
so, because that was before he went over to the classy Yankees and probably had to get a haircut when he played for them. Although that was before Steinbrenner ran the place, so he could have Steinbrenner owned the Yankees then.
Wait, why do I only imagine him with a fro then? But I don't. Yeah, he definitely had it on the Yankees because it came out the side of his. Yeah, he had it with the Indians too. All right, he's in.
Okay, good. Yeah.
Yeah, he's the one. So there you go. Well, that's the right answer to that question.
What did I do? What was my searching? Since 1964, the highest OPS by a player to never get an All-Star game in a single season. Guess who it was? Highest single season, never an All-Star Indian.
Oh, Indian? Since 1964. So they couldn't be on an All-Star team on any team?
Ever. And they played at least 250 plate appearances.
I have no idea.
That's how I trimmed it. It's Ryan Rayburn.
Oh, that's right. That won his every
in
other
2013,
year.
2013, he had a 151 OPS plus. Yeah,
he was super good once or twice.
Well, you know, he just never, as long as he didn't play against lefties or whatever. Yeah.
Or the outfield, Jesus Christ.
Or the outfield. Don't play him against righties, that's all.
And you know the Jeff Sullivan's, who by the way now works for the Rays, but his profile picture on Twitter is still Ryan Rayburn spiking a ball in the outfield.
Yeah, which is great. Classy time. Great time. Duke Sims is a pretty good pick. Catcher, first baseman, outfielder. Had a stretch there where he had a 118 OPS plus with the Indians. It was during the year of the pitcher, actually. He hit 249, 366, 399, which is equivalent to what basically Francisco Lindor did this year. Because he had a 133 OPS plus, so... Yeah.
So you got, it's a nice follow up to Oscar Gamble, I think. But I think Oscar's still the clear winner there.
Oh, definitely. The hair.
The hair. I mean, that's at least, that adds like a win every year.
Also the numbers. Just, he was really, really good for a little while there. Yeah.
Yeah.
For a long time.
Dreaming Baseball. He wants to know if every MLB franchise had to take a year off once every 30 years and 2019 was Indians' year not to play, which MLB team would you root for and why? I mean, it's basically which other team would you root for if not the Indians? That's the question. Mine's the Padres right now because I'm really. I know it'd be nice to say like the Astros or Dodgers or somebody super good to win a World Series, but that's basically just rooting for the Indians again, like a team that's gonna get to the playoffs, and all you're just waiting for is those final few games there's a 7-8 chance it's gonna be disappointing, and I'm really envious of the Padres right now because they're not good enough where they're a lock for the playoffs. There's still a bunch of interesting pieces to talk about. You have Manny Machado to follow now. You have so many prospects coming up, so it's going to be fun. Just cherish it, Padres fans. This is like the Indians in 2016, or maybe like a year before. I don't know.
Yeah, but... it's the 2015 Yankees, or Indians, rather, where you're seeing whispers of Francisco Lindor and stuff like that. And you're like, ooh, this is going to be good soon. The pitching is just starting to click, and then you just saw an amazing, like, your year off after, what's his name, won the first Cy Young.
Yeah, so that's
the guy. Like you see, like Trevor Bauer have these dazzling starts that collapse towards the end. He's just figuring it out. And you're learning more and more neat stuff about him before you learn too many things about him. And
you can still surprise people. That's the biggest thing. Like the Indians aren't going to surprise anybody unless they win the World Series. No. But if you're the Padres, you can shock the hell out of some people by getting into the playoffs, which is really fun, I think.
Yeah.
But just having it be an automatic thing. That's why I wouldn't want like any other playoff team, because it's basically just rooting for the Indians again, which I love rooting for the Indians and I want them to win, and regular season is still fun for the most part, but being one of those underdog teams again, just for a year, which, by the way, I don't want to be the Padres fan forever because I don't think it's going to last forever for them. I'd much rather stick to the Indians and watch the winning teams for more years after. But just maybe just 1 year of going back in time to the 2015 Indians, which is basically the equivalent of the Padres.
You know, I have to say, too, it is cool that the Padres actually – I mean, I know the White Sox trying to do the same thing, but, you know, Justin Verlander came out with that saying how if you're trying to rebuild, signing a guy like Machado or Harper to a 10-year deal is a pretty good method of rebuilding because he'll be there and be the anchor of your rebuild. You know, I mean, it's like with the Braves and Freddie Freeman. They already had the MVP candidate. Now they just have to put the pieces around him. There's not as much pressure on the prospects to flourish. So I think it is neat that it worked out that way rather than going to being the guy that pushes a team over the edge like the like he would be if he'd gone to, say, the Phillies, just being the guy who will be the cornerstone on which it's all built, which is obviously what Hosmer was supposed to be, and before that, what Myers was supposed to be.
Hosmer was supposed to be that. Okay, Merritt.
Well, you don't give someone a whatever okay, to be Merritt. Trash. There was hope there that his leadership and also hopefully stopped hitting the ball straight down. You know what? Down.
I take my answer back. They have Eric Hosmer. No, I don't want to root for him.
You already said it. It's recorded.
Yeah. In 2 years, he's going to be in his prime. So, I mean, you got 8 years of prime Manny Machado. But I guess the drawback to that is if the rebuild doesn't work, then it really hamstrings him for the next attempt.
That's all right. Then you just have the early 2000s Rangers, and that's fine.
That's fine. Everybody loves that team. So do you have anybody, or is yours the Padres and Eric Hosmer, too?
No. I think – I don't know. I'm kind of split three ways here. Two of them are obviously just because of proximity. Because I'm right near the Orioles, and I'm right near the Nationals. And the Orioles are neat because, I don't know, they're at the very beginning of that rebuild. And – I, you know, bad baseball is bad, but sometimes it's fun to see a little glimmer of hope when you see a guy who might be a piece turn into something. But I think they're a year away from me actually caring about what they're doing. Then there's the Nationals, who are like right down the road from me. And I know you said, you know, it sucks to just root for a team that's just like kind of going to be like the Indians, basically. But nobody actually cares about the Nationals, at least no one in this town. And like, there's just kind of this assumption that it's kind of all over because they're going to lose Bryce Harper or something. But the team's still so talented. They still have Anthony Rendon. Their whole outfield is really cool. They have Trey Turner. They have, what's his name? The young kid from
Juan Soto.
We have Juan Soto. They got Yan Gomes, obviously. They have, and then their pitching staff is really stupid still. Like, it's really a good pitching staff. So they've got Corbin. So they have Scherzer, Strasburg, and Corbin to go with whoever else. Sean Doolittle's just a cool guy, and he's very good at his job. So that's a good choice. And then my third was just going to be the White Sox, because I've always liked the White Sox.
First of all, gross. Second of all.
I know.
The Nationals are a good one. It's always surprised me. Like, I think it's always going to be, looking back in history, that it's amazing that team didn't win anything.
Well, and that's the thing. We talk about them as... But we talk about them as though they are a past tense thing. But, like, they got younger at catcher.
Well, I mean, when we do look back, yeah.
Right. Well, but like, yes, Scherzer is going to be 34 this year, but he's going to be still very good. If Strasburg could stay healthy for a whole year, then you're talking about something. They got Corbin, and their bullpen's finally coming together. Like, it's just – they were really unlucky last year. I think, yeah, they were 10 games, 8 games worth in their Pythagorean one loss percentage. So, like, they were supposed to be 90 and 72 last year. They're 82 and 80, and everyone got hurt, too. So, that's the thing. They still have, like, Rendon is one of the best players in this position. Juan Soto has the ability to be one of the best players in baseball. If they can get Harper back, then forget about it. But if they're healthy and they can do it, I think they're still a World Series contender, I think. It's just their division, that's part of it too. Their division is going to be really competitive. Like, every single game is just going to be so hard fought all year. Like, the worst team in that division, well, outside the Marlins, the worst team in that division is the Mets, and the Mets are a pretty good team. So I would say probably the Nats, just for, you know, just, I mean, it'd be easy for me to see games, but also that's a neat, good team with a lot of fun players and personalities.
Yeah, and a lot of competition around it too. That's another... Yeah. Fun part of it. Like, yeah. if the rest of the AL Central was good, then watching the Indians would be even more fun in the regular season. But knowing that they're just going to stomp everybody on the way is a little a little disheartening. But
That's why I said the White Sox too, is because I feel like they're kind of like the Padres minus the Machado thing. And again, I've always had a special place in my heart because they were so cheap to watch when I was living there. So,
but they do have a bunch of Machado's friends, so I mean that counts for something, right? That's
exactly. You know, when he comes to town, they can have a fun time, so it's okay. Yeah.
So friend of the show at Joel Hammond. He asked, are you surprised at all, after all of that, that Manny Machado and Bryce Harper still got the $300 million? I mean, to be fair, unless Joel is giving us some deep insider knowledge here, Harper technically hasn't gotten $3 million, but he's going to get $3 million. Like, Manny Machado got $300 million. There's no way he signs without getting it, no matter how long it takes. I would say, yeah, I'm a little surprised that they're going to get it. I thought we were to the point where teams are going to realize that you don't need a $300 million player to win a World Series. Because like we were just talking about the Nationals, they're still a really good team who could probably win a World Series, and they didn't need to pay Bryce Harper $30 million a year to do it. I mean, as far as like building a team, you could probably reinvest that $300 million other places and make a really good team out of it. And as far as fairness for players, I don't think any one player really needs $300 million, but there's probably 300 players who deserve $1 million more at least. So I don't know. I thought we were kind of past the the point where it made sense for both sides to want 300, but it's clearly not. They're going to set records, and then it's going to be really hard for the players to strike in a few years to get sympathy on their side, which they probably deserve it, because every cent they don't have shouldn't be going to the owners. They should be getting as much as they can, but it's going to be harder to get public favor for it. So I'm surprised for a lot of reasons that both players got $300 million, but mostly just because I feel like I thought front offices were to the point where they wouldn't. I don't believe it's collusion that like everybody's saying, let's just be cheap so we don't have to pay the players. I think it's really everybody's coming to the same conclusions through analytics that you don't need this one huge player. And I don't think Bryce Harper's should be worth more than Manny Machado. Even he's probably going to get more than him. Manny Machado, I think, is the better overall baseball player. But I guess it only takes one team, which in this case was the Padres, to blow everything up. I mean, it sounds like the White Sox thought they were going to win by only having, what was it, like 250 guaranteed. But it just takes one Padres to sweep in and jack up the price, and they win and get the money or get the player. So I'm sure somebody's going to do that and bend in the Bryce Harper sweepstakes eventually. It sounds like the Phillies will in a couple days. But Mary, are you surprised that the two?
Harper at least already had a $300 million deal on the table from the Nationals.
Did he?
Yeah, that's what they were. That's what I've heard on the radio down here a lot. Like that's what he that was the baseline. That's the baseline to get Bryce Harper.
Where did that and come from, though? That's my thing with all these rumors, especially with this one. It feels like more than before, like all the rumors have been directly fed from Scott Boras or somebody.
That's fair. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, this is what I heard both in the morning and afternoon shows. So I don't know. I'm assuming they have some sort of connection as well, but. Maybe I'm wrong, but I don't know. From what I understand, he's been like the number they were wanting 400. So that's what they were talking about on the radio today. So, you know, obviously, you know, as much as I do, but I'm not surprised at all. I thought I heard the White Sox did have a deal rivaling that of the Padres. And then of course you have the Phillies who have the money to spend and they read the tea leaves at the Braves are already better than them. And I mean, if the goal is to win a championship and their prospects are already all there, then they're pretty much stuck having to spend the money on the free agent market. So,
yeah, I think
go ahead. I disagree with you that I don't think we're past the age of the gigantic deal because we're a year or so removed from a pitcher approaching 30, getting $350 million. So, there's always going to be rich teams. Somehow Aaron Hicks has got $70 million. I mean, I think it's a good deal for the Yankees, but I never saw that coming in a million years. So I don't know. The money's always going to be there for the top end guys. Again, it's just all the low and the middle end, the middle, like the fact that guys like Keuchel aren't signed, you know, that those are the real head scratchers. And those are the real worry things, you know, those are the ones that are going to actually cause a strike. So, no, I'm not really that surprised that they got their money.
Yeah, that's fair.
Harper's really good and really young also. He's like, I don't know. Like his year this year was the third best on the third best by a hair by OPS plus on his team. And not by Wizard replacement, of course. He was not good there, but you know. defense is a bitch.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like looking at him compared to Machado. Machado's had way more consistently 5-6 win seasons. Bryce Harper had that monster season a couple years ago, and then it's a lot of pretty good seasons. Like, he hasn't been the superstar $70 billion player every single year of his career like Mike Trout or, I mean, even closer to Manny Machado, I guess. But I think the potential is so much as Bryce Harper that he's going to be entering his
prime. This past year was a weird head-scratcher, wasn't it? I am surprised his wins were replacement that low, but I guess his defense really was that bad. I know they were playing him in center a bunch, so that could have had something to do with it. And just the defense, like, everyone was so hurt, so his defense was really dragging it down. I think that's a bit of an outlier more than anything, because he's never had more than, what, a negative half defensive win. I see that negative 0.9 in 2016, when he was hurt all that year, too. So, I don't know. I think it's a bit of an outlier. I think he'll continue to be a 5 to 8 win guy for whoever signs him for the next 8 years or something like that. Like, that monster season was crazy. But I think he's close. I think he's considerably closer to that as a player than he is the player he was this year.
Oh, yeah. I think that's fair, for sure. Or even like 2 years ago. I mean, or 3 years ago, right. Again, a bad year.
Exactly.
Is my life all blending together, or was last year the one where the Cubs were walking him a bunch and frustrated him, and then other teams started doing it too?
Yes.
Was that? Okay.
No, wait. That was 2000. What year was that?
Was that 2016? Am I that far behind in my...
No, it can't be 2016.
Because he didn't walk a lot in 2017.
Go game logs. Let's see. At Cubs, 3-1. Yes, okay, that was 2016. You got to be kidding me.
Oh, my God, really?
They walked him 6 times in one game?
That was not that long ago.
Where he was hitting 265. Yeah, he was at... Oh, God, damn, that was that year.
Was it 2016? Am I losing my damn mind? That seems like it was this year.
Did that happen 2 years in a row?
Maybe, but you know what I'm talking about, right? There was the Cubs that walked him a ton.
Yeah, they walked him... Well, in 2016, in a 4-game series, they walked him how many times? They walked him...
They walked him a bunch this year once in September, but it was earlier than that, I remember.
3, 4... They walked him 13 times in 4 games.
He walked every single at-bat against the Marlins in September this year.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, so maybe that was...
Yeah, over a 4-game set, they got swept. He went 1-for-4 with 13 walks.
That was in 2016?
Yeah.
Merritt, did I time jump? Did I like find a wormhole in accident and I just was teleported here? Because I feel like
I don't know, man. I feel like I was just reading about that. Yeah. What the hell is going on here?
I don't know. I think we've just entered a different dimension where does Bryce Harper exist in this dimension?
Is he a person? His longest hitting streak is what? 19 games in 2017. He had a really weird year this year, too, where he just wasn't hitting at all. And in the second half of the season, he just started hitting a ton of singles.
Yeah.
It was very interesting. I was very impressed by that. You could almost feel it happening.
I mean, we'll end on a very important, topical, timely question here. At Claymo1, he asks, compare this team to the team in 1920. That's the question, which I like. That's a neat question. 1920, which I always forget, that's the other year the Indians won the World Series. I always think of 1948 because that's the last one, and that's when, gosh dang it, the Indians haven't won since 1948. I always forget they won in 1920 with Joe Sewell coming off the bench.
Hey, man, flags fly forever, you know? Yeah.
Until you forget about them. That was a monster team, almost 100-win team. The outfield alone, Charlie Jameson, 108 OPS plus, Elmer Smith, 136 OPS plus, Tris Speaker, of course, Hall of Famer, 172 OPS plus. But the bench was insane just by itself. Like I said, Joe Sewell came off the bench. Les Neumacher had a 128 OPS plus. A guy named Pinch Thomas was the catcher.
Baseball, very good.
Yeah. Four-man rotation, 35. Four-man bullpen. That is... I don't know if they did the opener then. Probably not.
No, boy, that bullpen sure was trash. Woo, baby.
So maybe they are closer to the modern Indians than we think.
That's why it's such a good comparison. You know, the rotation is just stacked up ass. It's amazing. Bagby and Kovaleski are perfect amalgams to that of Bauer and Kluber.
And Bradley Zimmer is the next Tris Speaker, so it all works out.
And there you go. And Bradley Zimmer is the next Tris. I believe you're wrong there because the power numbers aren't high. It's Tyler Naquin is the next Tris Speaker. That's what it is.
Tyler Naquin. Okay.
Yep. Yep.
It's pretty accurate.
Because the strikeout totals, right? Yeah, exactly. No, yeah, this is a very well-rounded team with ability to produce from multiple different positions and with strong leadership. So they are
like the current team.
Oh, no.
I mean, they won 98 games, and what did FanGraph project the Indians to win? Like 96? So maybe they'll be the same. Who knows?
Let's see.
Which, by the way, Pakoda projected like 90 wins, which is terrifying. So I'm very scared now. It is. Yeah, it wasn't great. It's the other way around. Pakoda has like 95. FanGraphs has
like 90. Yeah. Well, in this case, FanGraphs can cram it.
There was a glitch at one point where they had like 85 wins for the Indians and the Twins won the division. But I guess they fixed it. That was a scary couple hours of my life. But who knows?
Oh, you missed one good question.
What's that?
How did you get so handsome?
Well, Merritt, it's just natural. You're just born. There's nothing to do. You just
maybe it's Maybelline.
No, it's natural. There's nothing.
It's Maybelline.
It's not Maybelline.
It's definitely Maybelline.
I wanted Cameron Maybin to be bigger, just so we could say that more often. Maybin, it's Maybelline.
Oh God, you're really bad.
You've never heard that with Cameron Maybin?
No,
that was the best.
Because I don't listen to. That wasn't a bad thing.
Maybe he's born with it. Maybe it's
oh, man. On May 18th, 1920, the Indians lost 11-0 to the Yankees.
Let's not do that then for this team. Could we not? I live in New York. Could we not lose 11-0 to the Yankees?
Ooh, baby. Ping Bodie went 2-for-4.
Ping Bodie. But there's a guy on the bench, Hannah, Merritt, named Pinch Thomas. That is the best bench player name.
What about Truck Hannah? You said he's a catcher. Oh, he was bad. He went 2-for-3.
Old names are the
best.
This
is right before the team got good. Wally Pipp. The famous Wally Pipp.
We're done now. You're out, Pip. Anyway, Merritt, talk to you next week. Will it be more spring training? Bye.